Good morning, live from the Ron Scott Communication Center at Airshow Center. This is From the Stand. I'm Steve Buss, and joining me, as he always does on opening day, Jack Pelton, CEO and Chairman of EAA. Jack, welcome back.
Great to see you, and I'm just so happy that it's AirVenture Week.
It certainly is.
It just is that we all look forward to it. It's a lot of work and what have you, but it's just when you see airplanes, people, and everybody feeling good about being here, it's just a It makes me get up in the morning and be glad to be an EAer.
A lot of folks on social media back and forth, oh my gosh, the smoke, it's terrible. What's going on at Oshkosh? But you said you already have some numbers, preliminary numbers in from the couple of days.
We don't have Sunday's numbers in yet, but for the first couple when the smoke all started, which was actually much worse than Sunday, it was exactly the same numbers of parking, arrivals, aircraft operations, almost to within like 50 airplanes.
So wow.
They really did a nice job when it went VFR on Saturday. They just started streaming in here like I've never seen. And, of course, my concern was, would that cause people, especially when you're traveling from far away, is you to say, well, that means I can't get in until maybe Sunday, maybe Monday, I don't know. So, and I got to be back to work on Thursday. But so far, knock on wood. It's going good.
What's happening at headquarters these days? Mosaic is now a year old. How are you feeling about how it's going?
Actually, it's going fantastic. The first phase of Mosaic, there's actually two phases to it. There was the first phase, which was actually about the certificate and what airplanes you can operate. The second phase, which is being announced this week by the FAA, is the final change to the ASTM regulations on how you certify an airplane. And that's the new rules that will allow you to go build some new airplanes and some new innovative things and not have to certify them through Part 23. And that's a big step. And we'll see some announcements this week on what some of these aircraft manufacturers are going to do to really take advantage of that. It hopefully is going to help them reduce the certification costs because they self-certify.
Right.
And opens up for new technologies that they can't get certified in Part 23 today. So I think you're going to see more safety enhancements like flight control systems that have more, I don't want to say autonomous, but they have more envelope protection because you can electronic controls and those kinds of things. Power plants, the original LSA was only allowed to use a gas engine.
Right.
And so now you can have electric and you can have hydrogen, you can have turbine, you can have all these other things. So that's opening up the doors. And we're seeing that with Carbon Cub, who did the little turbine, which is, I can't wait to see that tomorrow. So we're going to probably close the door on calling it complete this week.
Okay.
So that's phase one and phase two of Mosaic, and there isn't any phases beyond that. Other than getting out and working with the flight schools and people to help them understand and rethink their business models. So you don't have to buy a bunch of LSAs to put on your flight line. You can use that 172 you already got.
Right. For those who know you, they know that you came from Cessna, right? And a lot of technology in the 80s, 90s, and things like that. How are you seeing technology impacting aviation today as far as main manufacturers, but also in the home-built community?
Home-built community, I'm seeing a lot of things happening. I mean, in the avionics side, there's some kind of a new wave of innovation that's going on right now, which is good.
Yes.
I think one of the new exciting ones is the Delta Hawk. I mean, it's been in works for a long time here in Wisconsin, and now they're actually in full-scale production. And they've got some horsepower ranges that are just perfect for RVs and other airplanes, and I think we're going to see that. They just certified them in the Piper, as a matter of fact, in the Seminole Twin, which those would be beautiful on an RV-10.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to see a lot more of that, and I think the adaptive manufacturing, which is really the 3D printing kind of stuff, in the certified world, there's a new engine that's going on the Beechcraft side of Textron Aviation, the Denali, which is a turboprop, and a lot of those parts, including fans, are done in that way of manufacturing. So I will see that. I can easily see that migrating down into the home built area, and things like Garmin's safe landing features that they have,
right,
where you hit the button and takes you home.
Oh,
so, good stuff.
Yes, it's all good. And with the technology, of course, we want to go to the other side, and that is the actual hands-on home-built community. How is home-building doing these days?
You know, I would say that probably on a whole, it's suffering the same thing all of aviation, which is the price and cost issues that they're facing with. So I hear when I'm at chapters, the first thing they ask is, what are you guys doing to help reduce the price of a home built? And it's like, well, let's walk through it. And you walk through they're facing the same thing the OEMs are with certified airplanes, which is things like engines and avionics and systems have just gone up significantly, 30%+. And so when you look at now what a kit and then what it takes to actually complete it, the cost is a lot higher than it originally was. And that, while you can say, okay, well, it's still, the ratio-wise, is still a big gap from a production airplane. So,
right.
So that's a good thing. But it's getting now to where it's higher than what our median incomes are. So that's a bad thing.
Right.
Because we used to always be able to, say, well, it's, a fancy boat, ski boats, a couple hundred grand nowadays. And
right.
It's like, well, so the airplanes are getting up, in the high hundreds also. The bill of material, people coming from the other world, 60% of the cost is in the bill of material of what you have to buy to be able to put an airplane together. In the production world, and 14% is labor, and it's so as those engines and everything continue to escalate in price, it's really starting to kind of make things a little softer. But we're working on an answer to that.
Okay.
So the answer is, in our advocacy world, we're taking on a big initiative, like, what do we do after Mosaic? Well, we've got to get lead out of the fuel. That's something that's facing us. We got to figure out how to integrate into the national airspace system with unmanned flight. So that's, that's out there. So what technology are we all going to have? And then we're working hard with the FAA to figure out how to relieve the maintenance burdens on the vintage aircraft and some of the inter-level, the 172s and what have you. The owner flown stuff that's only flying 50 hours a year.
Right.
Are we open to looking at not having an annual inspection, but an on-condition or on-hours condition inspection? How are we looking at how much can a person do of their own versus an A&P? And then the big thing we're working on is, how do we get parts that are certifiable or can be used in an easier fashion than going through the OEM having to purchase them? And the FAA is really on board with doing something about this. So we had a big summit with them in February, kind of laid out a game plan as to what we want to go after. And I see that's going to be a 1 or 2 year program. But if we can reduce that overall cost to ownership and availability of parts, I think we're going to put a big dent in keeping the fleet alive and keeping the barriers of getting into it lower.
Good. It was kind of, I had to pause just for a second when you said vintage airplane like a 172. Because when I think of vintage or antique, I'm thinking of something in the 30s and 40s,
yeah.
Not necessarily
a Luscombe or
Champ
or something else.
But it is true. Those are, they're getting older and parts are definitely a challenge. So I'm glad to hear that the EAA is working on that as well, not only with the home build community, but also supporting the vintage community as well. With this week coming up, what are some of the things that you're looking forward to?
Well, already, go out to the vintage area and look at the world's biggest biplane that's home built, which is the Douglas World Cruiser, which I followed for years because I started my career at Douglas Aircraft Company. And this guy has taken 20-plus years of his life to replicate exactly the World Cruiser and has flown. It's flown, and this could be its last. He didn't fly it here, trucked it here, but okay. I think it's going to end up in our museum for a period of time.
Okay.
But it's really something worth going and seeing. It brings up, people ask me, well, why do you get so excited about that? I said, that's what AirVenture, when you come here, you find these people who have extreme passion, but they take all of their resources, time, money, effort, marriages, relationships, children, and set it aside to pursue something that they are really, really interested in. But you just see that dedication and interest and it just kind of gets you excited about it. It's great to see that happening, and it's all right here.
Exactly. Will we see that airplane fly this week?
No, it will not fly.
Okay. Yeah. But the right flyer,
the B flyer will be flying.
Nice.
But really, right, today as we sit here, the vintage area is kind of one of these has upped its game compared to Warbird. So make sure everybody gets down and takes a look at what's going on there.
And the Red Arrows, of course, the end of the week.
Red Arrows. I'm so excited about that. That was a big one, and it was kind of a long story getting to that point.
Yeah.
They were coming to the United States for our 250th, which what's the term I was told by my friends in the UK? It's not Independence Day that they celebrate. It's getting rid of Dependence Day on the 3rd that they celebrate. They finally got rid of us.
Good riddance day.
Yeah. So they had planned on coming over, but they have never been to AirVenture.
Right.
And they told us that they had us penciled in to definitely be here when we went through all the planning process. They came out here, made a few visits that I was here for with the FAA to make sure that the aerobatic box would be accommodating to what they want to do. I would put it between the Snowbirds and the blues.
Okay.
Because it's snowbird-like as far as how tight and how many are up there and more of the in visually in front of you. There's not a lot of separation disappearing. Right. But they're faster, higher-performing jets with more smoke and more colors. And it's just a perfect fit of something we haven't seen here. I have seen them in Europe perform. And they're just fantastic. And so the problem was getting the announcement out. We're all excited come January, February. Let's get the word out and build up some enthusiasm. Print some T-shirts that say Red Arrows on it.
Right.
January goes by. February goes by. March. April. May. I'm like, guys, Rick, come on. Where are you? 50-50. I said, well, what do you mean 50? They said they're coming. They can't get their government to let them put out a press release and announce that they're actually coming. Because we had a war. And so they didn't know, like part of our military also, where are they going to be in July?
Yep.
And we finally got around to it at the end of May to making an announcement. I believe they fly in on Wednesday. And then I think there's a, I don't want to call it a demo. They do fly, but not the air show on Thursday. And then Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, they'll do the full air show. And Sunday, they'll close our air show, do their full thing, and then they head off.
For someone who's at this show for the very first time, what is the one piece of advice you would give them?
Do your homework relative to what are your interests. But if you have any particular unique interest that you're trying, whether it be vintage or home builds or warbirds or learning in the forums and workshops, look at our app, look at our website, plan the day, plan where you want to go and where you want to be, and make sure you circle and know where those things are. And get those out of the way so that you make sure you walk away with, okay, I at least checked or scratched the itch of whatever I wanted. Yeah. And then the other piece of advice I always give is when you're just out looking at planes and people and in the world, ask people what their backstory is.
Right.
You talk to them because you will find the most fascinating and interesting people from all over the world who are here. It's just, that's just what makes it, that's what, why people then will go away understanding when you come here for the planes, you come back for the people.
Absolutely. That's why we come back every year. And Jack, thank you very much for spending some time with us this morning, and good luck on the week. Hopefully it'll be a good one.
And I can assure you it's going to be warm. It's going to be cold. It's going to be wet at one point in time, and humidity, and we won't care. We'll have so much fun. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. This is From the Stand, and you're listening to EIA Radio.